Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry. Today, the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee held a hearing into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. Former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper said three agencies confirmed that there was interference.
As you know, the IC was a coordinated product from three agencies, CIA, NSA, and the FBI, not all 17 components of the intelligence community, those three, under the aegis of my former office. Following extensive intelligence reporting about many Russian efforts to collect on and influence the outcome of the presidential election, President Obama asked us to do this in early December and have it completed before the end of his term. The two dozen or so analysts for this task were hand-picked, seasoned experts from each of the contributing agencies. They were given complete, unfettered, mutual access to all sensitive raw intelligence data, and importantly, complete independence to reach their findings. They found that the Russian government pursued a multifaceted influence campaign in the run-up to the election, including aggressive use of cyber capabilities. The Russians used cyber operations against both political parties, including hacking into servers used by the Democratic National Committee and releasing stolen data to WikiLeaks and other media outlets. Russia also collected on certain Republican Party-affiliated targets, but did not release any Republican-related data. The intelligence community assessment concluded first that President Putin directed an influence campaign to erode the faith and confidence of the American people in our presidential election process. Second, that he did so to demean Secretary Clinton, and third, that he sought to advantage Mr. Trump. These conclusions were reached based on the richness of the information gathered and analyzed and were thoroughly vetted and then approved by the directors of the three agencies and me.
Clapper says it's over 4 months since the release of the information and the intelligence report still stands. But he says while there was interference by the Russians in the 2016 presidential election, he says there's no proof of collusion between the Russians and the Trump administration. Sally Yates, former acting attorney general, also testified today. She said she could not answer the question about whether there was collusion. Here's Clapper asked about an interview he did in March with NBC's Chuck Todd, followed by Yates being questioned by Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina.
That's the NSA, the FBI, the CIA, with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had anything, that had any reflection of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that included in our report. Chuck Todd then asked, I understand that, but does it exist? You say, no, not to my knowledge. Is that still accurate?
It is.
Ms. Yates, do you have any evidence, or are you aware of any evidence that would suggest that in the 2016 campaign, anybody in the Trump campaign colluded with the Russian government or intelligence services in an improper fashion?
And, Senator, my answer to that question would require me to reveal classified information, and so I can't answer that.
Well, I don't get that, because he just said he issued the report. And he said he doesn't know of any. So what would you know that's not in the report?
Are you asking me or?
No, her.
Oh.
Well, I think that Director Clapper also said that he was unaware of the FBI counterintelligence investigation.
Would it be fair to say that the counterintelligence investigation was not mature enough to come to his, to get in the report? Is that fair, Mr. Clapper?
That's a possibility.
What I don't get is how the FBI can have a counterintelligence investigation suggesting collusion, and you as Director of National Intelligence not know about it, and the FBI sign on to a report that basically said there was no collusion.
I can only speculate why that's so. There wasn't the evidence, if there was any, didn't reach the evidentiary bar in terms of the level of confidence that we were striving for in that intelligence community assessment.
It was revealed today that former U.S. President Barack Obama warned then-President-elect Donald Trump not to give the National Security Advisor post to Michael Flynn, who was eventually fired in a controversy about ties to Russia. Obama gave the warning in a one-hour Oval Office meeting with Trump 2 days after his election win. This afternoon, Trump's Trump's press secretary had his talking points ready.
The president doesn't disclose details of meetings that he has, which in this case was an hour-long meeting, but it's true that the president made it, President Obama made it known that he wasn't exactly a fan of General Flynn's, which is frankly shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone that given that General Flynn had worked for President Obama, was an outspoken critic of President Obama's shortcomings, specifically as it related to his lack of strategy confronting ISIS and other threats around that were facing America. So the question that you have to ask yourself really is, if President Obama was truly concerned about General Flynn, why didn't he suspend General Flynn's security clearance, which they had just reapproved months earlier? Additionally, why did the Obama administration let Flynn go to Russia for a paid speaking engagement and receive a fee? I mean, there were steps that they could have taken that, if that was truly a concern more than just a person that didn't had bad blood.
According to Yates, there was concern over Flynn misrepresenting contacts with Russia's ambassador to the U.S. According to Yates, there was concern over Flynn misrepresenting contacts with Russia's ambassador to the United States. She said from two meetings and one telephone call with White House officials about Michael Flynn when he was Donald Trump's national security advisor, concern was that essentially he could be blackmailed by the Russians. The incoming and outgoing French presidents met at the Arc de Triomphe in Paris this morning as part of a ceremony recognizing the end of the Second World War. Final results from the French presidential election show that the winner, Emmanuel Macron, received 10 million more votes than far-right rival Marine Le Pen. The official tally published Monday by the Interior Ministry showed that Macron collected 20.8 million votes, or 66.1%, while Le Pen garnered 10.6 million votes, or 33.9%. Macron's election support was the second highest for a French president in recent history. Jacques Chirac received 25.5 million votes, 82.2% of the tally. That was back in 2002. Le Pen's result was both a personal best and a best for her National Front party in a national election. In another sign of discontent with the two candidates, a record number of 4 million voters cast blank or spoiled ballots. In Nigeria, Nigerian newspapers published the names Monday of the 82 schoolgirls who were set free by the Boko Haram militant group. This was 3 years after being kidnapped by the Islamic extremists. The girls were flown to Abuja on Saturday after their release in exchange for Boko Haram commanders. They were welcomed by the UN Children's Fund. Matthew Wells has more.
The group of 276 girls were abducted 3 years ago by the extremist group. And before Saturday's release, there were still around 195 being held. The abductions triggered worldwide outrage and a viral social media campaign in support of their release, hashtag Bring Back Our Girls. According to news reports, the 82 newly released girls have arrived in the Nigerian capital to be greeted by President Muhammadu Buhari. UNICEF acting representative Peniel Ironside said it was heartening to know the girls would be returning to their families, but they would face a long and difficult process to rebuild their lives after the indescribable horror and trauma they have suffered. She said UNICEF was on standby to support the Nigerian authorities to provide comprehensive psychosocial support and make sure their education continues in a safe environment. UNICEF calls on Boko Haram to end all grave violations against children, she added, especially the sexual abuse and forced marriage of girls. Greater efforts must be made to bring them all to safety, she added. Matthew Wells, United Nations.
Today, Russia faced resistance from Western powers to a bid to win UN Security Council backing for an agreement it signed with Iran and Turkey, this on establishing safe zones in Syria. The deal was signed last week. It calls for the creation of 4 de-escalation zones to shore up a ceasefire, ban flights, and allow for deliveries of human aid. Russia, which along with Iran is an ally of the Syrian government, signed the agreement with rebel supporter Turkey as a key step to unwinding over 6 years of violence that has cost more than 320,000 lives. Seeking U.S. endorsement, Moscow circulated a draft U.N. resolution on Friday. It welcomes the deal and calls on all parties to abide by provisions setting up the de-escalation zones. The proposed measure calls on all member states to contribute in good faith to the implementation of the memorandum on the creation of the de-escalation areas in Syria. Last week, House Republicans passed Trump Care, a repeal and replacement of Obamacare. Senators are now taking up the measure, which will be debated, changed, or rejected before the House vote. Congress members, as well as other Democrats, voiced objections.
This dangerous and destructive bill leaves 24 million Americans without coverage.
Brooklyn Congressmember Yvette Clark.
It will cause the uninsured rate from my district in Brooklyn, New York, to skyrocket to over 12% and leaves over 400,000 Brooklynites in my district without coverage. Because of the severe cuts to Medicaid, this bill will also put people in a terrible position of having to choose between being able to eat, being able to obtain life-sustaining medication, or visiting their doctors. Which one do you, Mr. Speaker, suggest they choose? For most Americans, Medicaid benefits are not the end goal, but rather provides temporary support. And for seniors, Medicaid can mean the difference between nursing home care and dying alone. I urge my colleagues to consider the harmful and deadly real-life impact of this legislation, and I vehemently oppose it. I ask that we resist this cynical reverse Robin Hood sham that takes from the poor and gives to the rich. As President Lincoln said, you can fool some of the people all of the time and all of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time. This is a sham.
Mr. Speaker, I yield for the purpose of a unanimous consent request to the gentleman from New York, Mr. Espaillat.
Upper Manhattan Representative Adriano Espaillat.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to enter into the record a letter from AFSCME, which states this bill will cause millions to lose their health coverage and return to the days when even inadequate coverage was unaffordable.
Without objection.
Speaker, I yield 1 minute to the gentleman from New York.
Under the NCS in my district, 5% drop in uninsured rates. Subsidized based on income and region and not on age. Medicaid expansion covering 156,000 people will be lost. The president promised not to cut Medicaid. This bill guts it by $880 billion. This bill is a gut punch to America. Pregnant women seeking health care, kicked to the curve. Patients with pre-existing conditions, kicked to the curve. Senior citizens who will have to pay more for less, kicked to the curve. Over 24 million people, including 6.5 million Latinos, kicked to the curve. We demand Republicans stop kicking to the curve Americans.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker, I yield for the purpose of a unanimous consent request to the gentleman from New York, Mr. Jeffries.
Brooklyn, Queens, Representative Hakeem Jeffries, just before the vote on Thursday.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to enter into the record a letter from SEIU which states this legislation will leave millions without health insurance and decimate the Medicaid program.
Without objection.
Mr. Speaker, I yield 1 minute to the gentleman from New York.
Gentleman's recognized for 1 minute.
The House majority has once again made clear that under Republican rule, the system is rigged. The fix is in. The deck is stacked against hardworking Americans. And Exhibit A is your reckless Republican healthcare plan. Under Trump Care, 24 million Americans will lose access to health insurance. Under Trump Care, a draconian age tax will be imposed on people between 50 and 64. Under Trump Care, costs will go up, premiums will go up, co-pays will go up, deductibles will go up. Under Trump Care, tens of millions of Americans who are living with pre-existing conditions will be screwed. House Republicans are out to destroy the American healthcare system as we know it.
To Republican House members, Hakeem Jeffries says you will be held accountable. Here's another member of the New York delegation, chair of the Democratic Caucus, Bronx-Queens Congressmember Joe Crowley.
The gentleman from New York is recognized for 1 minute.
I thank the gentleman. Well, here we go again. The majority thinks they finally found the right combination of political giveaways to pass their bill. A bill that, we have to remember, still kicks 24 million Americans off their health care coverage. It still charges seniors more. It still takes away the most basic protections of your health plan. and that it should cover. And despite what you hear, this latest Band-Aid amendment is not going to change any of that. That's just what we know so far, since this bill was built on backroom deals and haphazard guesses. We don't even know how much this bill will cost. Not just dollars added to the deficit, but the human cost of how much more damaging this bill will be. It's the height of irresponsible governing, not just rushing something through without full and fair consideration. Frankly, we're getting used to that on our side of the aisle. But to force through a bill that you know is going to hurt, it's going to hurt 24 million Americans. It's more than irresponsible. It's just plain wrong.
But New York's Chris Collins, who represents Batavia, Hamburg, and Geneseo in upstate New York, says Trump Care is a great game changer.
We have the chance to eliminate excruciating mandates and taxes that are suffocating our economy and marketplaces. Under Obamacare, premiums have increased by over 37% since 2014, and one-third of counties in this country have only one insurance provider. 4.7 million Americans were kicked off the insurance coverage they wanted to maintain, despite President Obama's promise that if you like your health care plan, you can keep it. But today, we have the chance to lower premiums, increase competition amongst insurance providers, and improve access to health insurance for all Americans. And we finally have the chance to formally reject an unprecedented government overreach into health care and take the first step towards giving patients control over their own health. In Western New York, this bill will have even more profound benefits. The amendment that I authored with Representative John Faso will relieve county governments in New York of a $2.3 billion unfunded mandate forced onto county taxpayers by the governor of New York, and will substantially reduce the tax burdens of property owners across New York State. This one provision of the American Health Care Act will save taxpayers in the eight counties that I represent over $470 million a year. This is a game changer for local New York governments and restores a fundamental tenet of representative democracies, that the level of government that makes the decision about spending should be responsible for raising those funds. I'm proud to stand up for Western New Yorkers whose voices have been silenced for too long. And I am proud to vote for the freedom, fiscal responsibility, and local decision-making this bill guarantees.
Gentleman's time has expired.
I urge all my colleagues to do the same, and I yield
back. Gentleman from New Jersey.
New Jersey Congressmember Frank Pallone.
Mr. Speaker, I remind my colleague from New York that his vote for this bill will take away protections for 3,031,000 people in New York with pre-existing conditions.
Massachusetts Representative Joe Kennedy says he sees the health care bill as a manifestation of the mean-spirited nature of the Trump administration.
This bill doesn't just cut coverage and hike premiums, all for a tax cut for the wealthy. It codifies a worldview by this administration that is dead set on dividing America along the lines of the God of your prayers, who you love, where you come from, or your fate and fortune. We see it in their tax plan, in their budget cuts, and immigration policy, and now in healthcare. In a worldview that scapegoats the struggling and the suffering, that sees fault in illness, that rejects the most basic universal truth of the human existence, that every single one of us one day will be brought to our knees by a diagnosis we didn't expect, a phone call we can't imagine, and a loss we cannot endure. So we take care of each other, because but for the grace of God, there go I one day. And we hope that we will be shown that mercy too. It is the ultimate test of the character of this country confronting our chamber today. Not the power we give the strong, but the strength with which we embrace the weak.
Massachusetts Representative Joe Kennedy. Minority Whip Steny Hoyer, he's a Democrat from Maryland, he says the bill takes away health care for those with pre-existing conditions.
No matter how Republicans try to spin it, healthcare advocates from the AMA to AARP to everybody that follows have said that it ends protection for those with pre-existing conditions. It ends protections for those with pre-existing conditions. It ends protections for those with pre-existing condition, and it takes away essential health benefits like doctor visits, emergency room visits, and prescription drugs.
An issue which kept coming up again and again was funding for women's health. It kept getting bashed. Republicans made clear they want to take away federal funding for abortion and for Planned Parenthood, even though it performs an array of health services. Here's Congressmember Neil Dunn. He's a Republican from Florida.
The American Health Care Act will create a patient-centered system that will lower the cost of health care and serve patients. This act eliminates Obamacare's taxes, subsidies, and mandates. It defunds Planned Parenthood. It puts Medicaid on a budget, and it is the largest entitlement reform in a generation.
There's much emotion in the health care debate. Some House members say they feel the weight of their constituents. Here's former head of the Congressional Black Caucus, G.K. Butterfield of North Carolina, pleading with colleagues to vote against the bill.
If you are an average 40-year-old adult with a pre-existing condition and have diabetes, your premiums will rise $400 a month, it is estimated. If you have rheumatoid arthritis, $800 a month. And heaven forbid, if you have some pre-existing condition involving cancer, the numbers just go off of the chart. You know, and I know, this bill will not see the light of day in the Senate. This is a political stunt to save face with your right-wing base. You know it, and we know it. If this wasn't so serious, affecting the economy and the affordability of insurance, I would say just go on and do it, because you will lose your opportunity to serve in this House, and you will ultimately lose the majority. Don't do it.
But they did do it, the vote 217 to 213. And after the vote, just before Republicans went to the Rose Garden to celebrate their victory with Donald Trump, Democrats started to sing this. Nana, hey, hey, kiss him goodbye. This stuck in the craw of activists who joined together on Sunday at a live stream launch of the People's Congress for Resistance.
The Democrats who lost the vote were singing. They were singing a celebratory song because they felt that the passage of this health care bill that would take away health care benefits for as many as 20 million people would result in the Republicans losing the election in 2018. They were celebrating the actual loss of people's health care benefits because they felt it would ultimately damage the Republicans. In other words, they don't care about the people.
Ryan Becker with the Answer Coalition says Democrats in 2009 and 2010, when they had control of the House, the Senate, and the White House, could have passed single-payer health so everyone in red and blue states would be covered right now, ending the debate.
People who are part of the resistance are being told now by the Democratic Party, including Bernie Sanders, including those who are part of the electoral insurgency, the remarkable electoral insurgency that Sanders led, that they should unite to get the Democrats control of the House, that our resistance should be about that. But again, let's look back and see, what did it mean when the Democrats did have control of the House and the Senate? It meant nothing.
Just this past week, Hillary Clinton made a statement which made some activists gag.
I spent decades learning about what it would take to move our country forward, including people who, you know, clearly didn't vote for me, to try to make sure that we dealt with a lot of these hard issues that are right around the corner, like robotics and artificial intelligence, and things that are really going to be upending the economy for the vast majority of Americans, to say nothing of the rest of the world. So, I'm now back to being an activist citizen and part of the resistance.
Recently, Clinton claimed that she was joining the resistance, and of course, what that means is only resistance to the Trump regime or the Republican Party. This gives many liberals permission to forgo the struggle to end capitalism and imperialism in favor of get out the vote efforts for the equally bad, if not worse, Democrat Party.
Author and social activist Cindy Sheehan says the U.S. Congress has long been the representative of Wall Street and the war machine, with a stranglehold on the electoral system where the distinction between the Democratic and Republican Party is non-existent.
It's time for people to recognize this and join with each other in opposition to not just Trumpism, but the entire imperialist system that allowed Trump to ascend and replace another able servant of empire, Barack Obama. This Obama, who bragged about being at war for all 8 years of his regime, and who is now profiting from Wall Street speeches. Do you think Wall Street would be rewarding him with such largesse if he wasn't good for business? We know this his regime consistently bailed out Wall Street and the banks, while at the same time literally kicking the people to the curb. As our ecosystems are collapsing due to capitalist profit and exploitation, we recognize that committed struggle against the systems of oppression is much harder than opportunistic protests or opposition. But in the end, we must wage this existential struggle for the present and future of human life. I think that this is a struggle worth fighting. I see the effort of the People's Congress of Resistance not as nonpartisan effort, but a partisan. I believe we need an entirely different system here in the U.S. if the nation, and by extension the world, has any chance of survival. And this is not something that can be put off or use the other stale old concept of incrementalism. We need to act yesterday, not be hypnotized with the enticement that even if the entire Congress turned Democrat in 2018, that anything would be changed for the better for the people. We have recent history that shows us otherwise.
Activist and author Cindy Sheehan. If you'd like more information on the People's Congress, go to congressofresistance.org. We'll have more in coming days. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs, mostly saying hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going now. Stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going now. We better stop now. What's that sound?